This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. In this portion of the program, the bond between people and animals. Dr. Alan Schoen is our guest. Dr. Schoen is a veterinarian who believes animals have feelings and emotions. He says both humans and animals benefit when we recognize and respect the bonds between us. When he began to study and then practice veterinary medicine some 20 years ago, his views on animals' feelings and emotions were seen as radical or ridiculous. Dr. Schoen uses conventional and what are called alternative therapies, therapies including acupuncture, chiropractic, and nutrition, in his work with animals. He is the author of a number of books. His latest is Kindred Spirits, How the Remarkable Bond Between Humans and Animals Can Change the Way We Live. Kindred Spirits is published by Broadway Books. Listeners, I invite your questions for Dr. Alan Schoen. Join us with a telephone call. Here are the numbers. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 1-800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Dr. Schoen, good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Celeste. Thank you for having me on your wonderful show.
Oh, well, it's a pleasure to talk with you. I am so enjoying Kindred Spirits. Tell us when and how you knew you wanted to be a veterinarian.
My grandfather actually joked and said to me the first words out of my mouth were animal doctor. Before mom and pop. It was one of those things where as soon as one is conscious of thoughts and what you were going to do in life, that's all I knew, was that I was going to be an animal doctor. My mother said she had saved a little note I wrote when I was like five saying, when I grow up, I'm going to be an animal doctor out in the country helping animals that can't be helped any other way. Mm. And I had no idea that that would end up meaning acupuncture, natural therapies, herbs, nutrition, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny how our life journey takes us.
And you were a city kid.
Absolutely, yes. I kept on, again, wondering, what happened? I thought I was supposed to be raised in the country. And I just had this yearning for constantly being in nature amongst animals. And whenever I had an opportunity, and you know, I found a little pond near me and would go, and every spare minute would spend at the pond with the frogs and the turtles and the fish, and just had this, what I talk about in the book, what E.O. Wilson at Harvard talks about, of biophilia,
mm-hmm.
this innate genetic desire to be with all of life. And I think that connection is within all of us. It may be stronger in some than others, and the more one is around animals as children, the stronger it is supported and developed.
Did you and your parents share your home with animals?
Actually, interestingly enough, my parents, not being well off or anything, us being a very small apartment, I wasn't allowed to have any animals unless they were in a tank. So I had turtles and fish at first, and then graduated up to hamsters and things of that nature, and actually didn't have a larger animal, so a pet, you know, animal mm-hmm. friend such as a cat or dog till I was like 13.
Yeah, but you had a really strong connection with the animals that you had. Those turtles were, you were connected with those guys.
Absolutely. It's quite amazing when one, if that's all one has,
uh-huh.
then that becomes your focus, and then you become much more attentive to their awarenesses. And you realize that, gosh, they're thinking that they, interestingly enough, seem to be timed to when you're home, that they really enjoyed connection, they enjoyed being touched. And some people might say, oh, my God, a turtle? Come on. But once I became a veterinarian, and actually I received my master's degree in animal behavior and neurophysiology from the University of Illinois in Urbana.
Right.
And once I started recognizing that there's a scientific basis for this, that we have these touch receptors, that stimulate endorphins and stimulate different neurotransmitters in the body, and that all animals have this, it starts making sense that, oh, okay, we do like when we're touched, it stimulates different healing mechanisms in our body.
Mm-hmm.
And even turtles have that.
You know, I think when we're kids and even when we're adults and we live with animals, whether it be a cat or a dog or whatnot, I think those of us that love our animals, we know that they have emotions and an emotional life. But other folks in your background thought that that was pretty silly way of thinking. How is it that we pass from going from, you know, being a child and being childlike with animals and really being so well connected with them, and then we can, or some people can, grow so far apart from that?
Well, I think what happens is, as you said, as children we all know this, and as children we all have this connection. Then what happens is there's a constant indoctrination process from the world, like, no, 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 you're not really, your dog isn't, or your cat or your turtle isn't talking to you. And there are all these negative inputs saying you're crazy, you can't talk to the animals, and that we get busier and busier and busier in our lives, and we start getting cut off from those things that we just took for granted as children. And as scientists, once you start going into academia or becoming a veterinarian, or colleagues of mine who became animal behaviorists, there's this carte blanche scientific statement that if there are no double-blind placebo-controlled studies done on something, it doesn't exist. And that's the way you're trained, is that you can't state anything unless you have these studies. Then I think as one evolves in scientific fields, you start realizing that life did exist before double-blind studies. And that just because a double-blind study hasn't been done doesn't mean something doesn't exist, and that the lack of evidence does not mean lack of efficacy. And the challenge is a lot of these studies these days are sponsored by pharmaceutical companies or industry corporations that have a financial interest in an outcome. So there isn't as much funding for studying consciousness in animals or feelings or emotions in animals. But it's fascinating. Whenever I go to any major conference, whether it's in veterinary medicine and animal behavior, and I just came back from one on consciousness out in California, and everyone's talking about all the latest research and everything, and then you'd start talking to someone about their own personal animal companion, and I use the word animal companion rather than pet because I think the concept of pet and owner are inappropriate terms denoting ownership. But you start talking about their own animal companion, whether it be a bird, a cat, a horse, a dog, whatever, and all of a sudden you see them change into a different space inside of themselves, and they start talking from their heart. And they say, oh, of course my dog knows this. Of course my cat knows this. Yes, my horse is always talking to me. Yes, the bird understands this. And we get back to that personal connection that is in our heart. So what happens as we've gotten older, we've gone from responding to life from our heart space to responding to life from our mind. And the animals help bring us back into our heart space. And this is why I think it's so vital that we support and share our lives with our animal friends. One of the things I say is, you know, one of the metaphors these days is that the, say, South American rainforests are the lungs of the earth. I feel our connection with our animal friends is our heartbeat.
Hmm. Tell us about your golden, Megan.
Megan was one of my best teachers, and it's funny in life how our teachers show up in different ways and oftentimes quite unexpected ways. And Megan was my first golden retriever, and I had just finished veterinary school. And a friend of mine found her. This was up in New Hampshire, New England, when I was living my dreams of being James Herriot up in New England. And she found her just on the side of the road, coughing and collapsing, coughing and collapsing. And she was like that for a few weeks, and no one was claiming her. So she brought her to me. And up there at that time, with symptoms like that, the odds were that she had heartworm. And sure enough, I took a blood test on her, and she actually had more what are called microfilaria, or baby heartworms, in her blood than almost blood cells. And at that point, most dogs don't survive. It's too far along to progress. But I looked at her, and I looked in her eyes, and she had those classic doe-type golden retriever eyes. And I looked, and I said, well, I'll treat you. If you make it, I'll keep you. And fortunately, she did make it. And there's a period of recovery after the treatment where they have to remain absolutely still for like 6 weeks, where you can't let them run free or anything like that. So I took her on my barn call so I could watch her closely. And she would go into the barn and just watch what I do, or she'd come into my animal hospital and watch what I do. What I didn't realize was that during that time, she was learning, and she was absorbing, watching myself, what I was doing as a veterinarian treating animals. And as she improved, then she started continuing going on my calls with me. And what I noticed was we'd walk into a situation, say, like one of the stories I give in the book, where we walked into this old classic Vermont red small family cow farm up in New Hampshire, and it was like a cold wintry night, and there was a cow calving, and she was having a problem. So we walked in, and I immediately went over to the cow and started my physical exam, diagnosed her with milk fever, and she immediately ran over to the farmer's daughter, who was crying, who was very attached to this cow, and started licking the farmer's daughter and kissing her. Then once I stabilized the cow, I went over to start assisting in her birth, and she started mooing and being anxious, and Megan went right over and started licking her face. Then I delivered the calf, and she went over to help the calf. And what I recognized was that she had become my own canine Florence Nightingale, and that while I was treating the Western medical approach, treating every animal with what they needed, she was going over and treating in her own way, treating with love. And she, time after time, would find the animal, whether it was two-legged, four-legged, or winged, that needed the most love and would just go over there and give it to them.
Yeah. Tell us one more story about her, maybe the baby goat story.
Oh, that one. Yes, actually, there's one other one, if I may,
sure,
about the lamb. That
okay.
One time, this little lamb had come in to the emergency room at night and had just been attacked by a pack of wild dogs, and she was in shock and unconscious and semi-comatose, and I treated her for shock, again, with Western medicine fluids and shock therapy, but I knew she wouldn't make it through the night. So I took her home, and I was just at that point living in a little one-room cabin with a little wood stove up in New Hampshire. So I put her in front of the wood stove and bundled her up, hooked up my intravenous fluids to the ceiling, and Megan went and licked all her wounds and laid right on top of her through the whole night. And when I woke up in the morning, the two of them were standing by my side at sunrise, and the lamb going, ah, and Megan barking. And again, she just had this, whether, you know, I asked her at different times, is this just your maternal golden retriever instinct, or did you consciously evolve to a different level watching me? And as we do more and more studies, we start finding out that animals do learn. You can teach old dogs new tricks, so to speak.
Right.
And that, to me, it was a combination. It goes back to the old nature-nurture controversy. And to me, she was, yes, there was certain genetic predispositions of her being a golden retriever and being a female golden retriever that her maternal instincts did come out. But they also interacted with her watching me do work on all the other animals.
Mm-hmm.
So she evolved consciously into this loving, compassionate healer, giving, spreading the healing power of love through all my patients.
Wow. Our connections with animals and their connections to us can vary so much. I know cats are cats and dogs are dogs and birds are birds, but their personalities, if I can use that word, are so different. Did you ever wonder what made Megan? You know, what makes a dog like... You know, what allows for such a thing to happen?
Well, I think what happens with most of us are we're a combination of certain genetic predispositions and then our environmental influences, what happens, our experiences in life, and that our personality becomes the combination of those genetic influences and our life's experiences. And her life experience were, one, I think she had been a mother prior, you know, and had a litter of puppies prior to me because just the way she was and, you know, anatomically and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Two is she was a stray, so she knew what it was to be without love. She was sick. She knew what it was to be healed. And by watching me treat all these animals, that just became a natural part of her.
Hmm.
And all of that culminated in her thought processes of interacting like that. And that's where, for a long time, science said animals are robots, and they're all instinct, and they can't learn. And if they do learn, it's just from instinct, you know, from specific patterns, which I don't believe. And more there's more evidence documenting that animals are indeed conscious, that they make choices, that they think. And again, to any animal lover, it's like, duh. You know, it's common sense. But to the scientific field, we needed studies. And more and more of these studies are coming out now.
Yeah.
And I think Megan was an excellent example. And again, you know what I find ironic is some of the top scientists may be saying, well, we need more study on this and more study on this or something. But then you talk to them about their own animal companion, and all the studies go out the door.
Dr. Alan Schoen is our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. He's a veterinarian. He is the author of Kindred Spirits, How the Remarkable Bond Between Humans and Animals Can Change the Way We Live. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I encourage you to join our conversation this afternoon. Give us a telephone call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 1-800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Has the schooling of vet med students changed since you were a student?
Fortunately and dramatically.
Good.
You're contacting me. I'm currently at the annual American Veterinary Medical Association meeting in Boston right now, and I was just lecturing here, and I'm an adjunct professor at Tufts Veterinary School, as well as affiliate faculty at Colorado Veterinary School. And what's happened is there's a general acknowledgement that yes, animals have feelings, emotions, and they feel pain, which when I was in veterinary school, I was being admonished for stating that an animal was in pain. And they said, how do you know that? And nowadays, it's, you know, like, okay, of course they're in pain.
Right.
And they suffer. And that we can do many different things to alleviate suffering. But part of that is also giving them love. And that is an integral part of healing, and that's being recognized more and more at the more progressive, open-minded veterinary schools. In addition, some of the programs I've worked on at the veterinary schools is integrating natural medical approaches, natural therapies such as acupuncture, chiropractic, herbs, nutrition, things like that. And so the veterinary schools are really making great advances in balancing the hardcore science, which we all need as a foundation, but also some of the more humanistic, warmer sides of the human-animal bond.
Mm. Veterinary school for you was very difficult when you went through it. What was most difficult, and how did you manage to stick with it?
Well, the challenges were, again, that, when I was doing research, I never wanted to do anything that would hurt an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And two, that I did feel very strongly that animals had feelings and emotions, that they did feel pain, and that it was okay to be a scientist and also acknowledge that, and to also still keep your heart open. And that was not supported by much of the faculty. Certainly, there were certainly some faculty members that did feel that way, but many of them, if they did feel that way, they had to keep it very quiet. And so that whole concept of human-animal bond, of emotions, feelings, was greatly not supported. And so it was very, very difficult. And even when I first got out of veterinary school, one of the stories I share in the book is how they, you know, sent me off to dehorn some adult cows, and when I used nerve blocks and painkillers, the veterinarian was yelling at me, "Why to waste the time on that? You just chop them off." And, I mean, it's like horrific to think about it, to not say that they didn't feel pain when you were doing that. And nowadays, those things are, you know, much, much less, and we've acknowledged that animals do feel pain. It's amazing that, to me, what's amazing is that 20 years ago, there was a question mark still.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so recent.
Yes.
It's like a blink.
Right. Echo. And but again, because there wasn't a study documenting it, and we couldn't state certain things. But nowadays, again, there are more studies, plus there's more just an acknowledgement that, of course, animals have all these emotions and feelings and thoughts.
Hmm. Let's talk with a listener on the toll-free line in Taylorville. Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. I was just thinking how many parents are... more or less disinclined to get serious with their kids about what pets are, really. They're living, feeling creatures, same as us. And I was thinking that several books I've been meaning to give some friends who have some children, and I would recommend that people look into the work of Ernest Thompson Seton, who is a an amazing creature in that he really dedicated his life to the promotion of a genuine understanding of wild things. There's this book of his called Lives of the Hunted, a series of stories illustrated by himself. There's also a marvelous little book I came across recently called, I know the title is tacky, but it's a real-life story about a starling called Arnie the Darling Starling. It almost makes my teeth smart to pronounce that title. but really, it's a lovely book, and it does open you up to what you've been talking about, the fact that animals, in their own way, are just as individual and just as special as we are, even if they don't have the sorts of elegant cerebral cortex as we have. I think Seton was the fellow who started the Boy Scouts. Offhand, I'm not positive, but anyway, a remarkable human being, and I recommend his work as a good place to start children. Those stories in that particular book I mentioned are definitely for older children, because quite a few of them end tragically.
Oh. Is Seton spelled S-E-T-O-N?
S-E-T-O-N.
Okay. Well, thank you for that.
Yes, I'm familiar with some of those. And I think that in the bigger picture, this is so critical, is teaching children that animals do have feelings, personalities, emotions, because if we can instill that level of compassion for all life in our children, the whole world will evolve differently. And, you know, like a good friend of mine and one of my heroines is Jane Goodall, and she has this program called Roots and Shoots, which she has now in, I believe, over 63 different countries, where it goes into the schools, and it is a program to create activists for animals and the environment based on the awareness that all animals deserve respect and care, all beings, all life do.
Hmm. In the book you write, there's more to the bonds that we have with animals than they make us feel good. You write, they can lead to a bond that transcends everyday reality and takes both human and animal to new levels.
Yes, there's, you know, again, dancing between science and quote-unquote anecdotes. The science is documenting this whole new field called animal-facilitated therapy, and also documenting the health benefits of animals, so that they find not only the well-known studies where they lower blood pressure when you're in the presence of an animal, but that animals in prisons help teach prisoners compassion, love for other beings, care of others. They teach the elderly. They help in senior citizen homes, with orphanages, with children, with abused children, with even with ADD children, things that animals are an integral part of the healing process, and that people can talk and be with an animal like they can't with themselves. And I'm constantly on my website, I'm getting in stories from the book of all these profound effects that and benefits that animals are having on people in their lives. But the studies, it's interestingly, even in stockbrokers in New York that did not have an affinity for an animal, that they took this as a group and they had the ones that had heart attacks, and they had them have an animal friend, a pet, and what they found was statistically significant decrease in second heart attacks and lowering of blood pressure in these stockbrokers.
Hmm. Well, we're getting a lot of from the animals. What are they getting from us?
What they get from us is our choice. They get love from us. They can get love, compassion, respect, companionship. Animals, you know, certainly our companion animals like dogs have been with us for eons, and they do have a special bond genetically programmed in them, you know. And it's interesting, there was a story on foxes, I believe it was, in Russia that were being used for coats, and during the communist era, and they were in Siberia, and the farmers who were raising them just started naturally picking the foxes that were friendlier because they were easier to work with. And in a matter of 30 years, they genetically modified these foxes to be as friendly as dogs, not even thinking about it.
Hmm.
And so the more animals are with us, the more they do develop a bond, a connection, a love from us. The flip side of it is when they're with us, animals can be a manifestation of the good, the bad, and the ugly of human nature.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, this in February when I was on book tour, the whole thing in San Francisco with the Canary Mastiffs ending up killing someone, these dogs, and they were previously owned by a drug lord. So that, you know, that showed the dark side, using the Star Wars metaphor, the dark side of the Force, how if they're around us, they can pick up the good or the bad.
Mm.
And it's our choice and our responsibility that for all beings that we try to emphasize as much as we can coming from love.
Yeah.
Because interestingly enough, when the original Bible was translated from Aramaic, the word dominion over was actually mistranslated. And I was talking to different scholars, and they said it was supposed to be stewardship of or caretakers, which denotes a completely different concept of our relationship with the animals in our lives and the animals in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Is we don't have dominion over that, we can do whatever we want to them. We're supposed to be their caretakers.
Their guardians. With love and respect, companion animals can live longer, healthier lives. I have no doubt about that. But how can we make sure we're paying attention, that we're aware of what's going on in terms of the well-being of our animals? Because they can speak to us, but sometimes it's difficult to translate. You know, it's difficult to figure out what's going on.
A number of ways. One, it's really important to have a good relationship with your veterinarian, because your veterinarian has been trained to pick things up in your animal before they become more obvious to you. So an annual physical exam, or even a biannual physical exam, is very, very beneficial. But in addition, in my book, I talk about something you can do at home every day or every week, what I call the natural pet scan. And this is a technique that I show, that where you start with like a massage of your animal, and you turn it into a massage so that there's the healing power of touch and you're connecting and they're enjoying it. But as you're doing that, you run your hands over and you start feeling for any lumps or bumps, any swellings. You use all your senses. You smell the ears if there's picking up an early ear infection, and look in their mouth and look at their eyes and feel them all over. Feel if there's resistance, pain anywhere. By doing this once, twice a week, some of my clients do it every day. What you do is you pick something up very early before it becomes so pronounced that they're letting you know from not eating or from having diarrhea or something like that, or before growth gets too big that it can't be removed. And so, again, I call that my natural PET scan, and that's something you can do that is a bonding experience, mm-hmm. a loving experience. It's a win-win for everyone, and you can keep up on your animal's health and prevent major problems, catching them very early.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener, this one in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
The doctor took note of the fact that he was an affiliate faculty member at Colorado Veterinary School, and I have a story about it. Graduate of that school, which goes back to the point where he was talking about veterinarians weren't always so sensitive. This was a man who had a small animal clinic in one of the Denver suburbs, and he was a prominent member of a board of a college which I worked for, and he was, of all the people on the board, the most sensitive, the most understanding, the one who really picked up immediately on almost anybody's problems or issues. And I said to him one day, John, how do you have this great sensitivity? And he grinned at me and said, the dogs and cats can't tell you where it hurts. So even then, there was some of that going on, I think. And I like your PET scan. I'll try that on my cat.
Yes, it's a wonderful experience. And cats, just like dogs, they absolutely love it. You know, they start looking forward to it. My cat comes up to me and waits for it.
Yeah. Cats are neat animals. When I was growing up, we always had dogs, and it wasn't until I was grown and finished with college that I had a cat. And all those things about cats, I was told as a child, are wrong.
Right.
You know, that cats are not people-oriented animals, that they're aloof, and that they don't need TLC, and that's not right at all.
Anyone who says they're not a cat person and makes comments like that, I always say, get a cat. There's no way you can prove to someone until they experience it.
Yeah. Tell us about you mentioned the cat that you have now that enjoys the PET scan. Tell us about some of the other companion animals that are in your life at the moment.
Well, right now it's limited to, all my animals are always animal rescue, ones that have come into the hospital or strays. And right now I just have one animal rescue golden retriever and one cat. And then I share my yard. We have a wildlife reserve behind the house with deer and hawks and wild turkeys and coyote and bobcat. And it's really, and all the birds. And I enjoy just being with them as well. And but inside the house, it's mostly my dog and my cat.
Yeah.
And they're all great. My current golden retriever isn't quite as sensitive in the, like Megan was, as a Florence Nightingale. You know, I joke and I say, I did a brain scan on him, and the only thing inside was a great big tennis ball. But he also has great teachings for me, and, you know, just saying, lighten up.
Yeah.
You know, one time I went to interview the chimpanzee Washo, who was the first chimp that had learned American Sign Language.
Uh-huh.
And he was out in eastern Washington. I was teaching out there, so I had arranged to interview him for Kindred Spirits. And I said, as I'm driving up there, I was saying, okay, here's this chimpanzee who has learned and American Sign Language and been communicating with human beings for 30 years. What am I going to ask them? And I'm going through, what's the meaning of life? what's your relationship with people? What do you think of human beings? Are you happy? What is happiness to a chimp? You know, all these profound different things. And I get to the place where he's living, and the caretaker says to me, you know, Washo goes through different things and, you know, has different fetishes, right? And, you know, so you just have to watch her sign language and she'll let you know, you know. So I go in there, and so she goes and she points to my shoe and signals for me to untie my shoelace. So I do that and then have to pull out, take my shoe off. So I take my shoe off. Then she goes and she points to the bottom of my foot and she tickles it and starts through the glass and starts laughing. And I go, here I am thinking of all these deep thoughts I want to ask her. And she's giving me the ultimate message, lighten up.
Lighten up. You want to be happy, I'll tickle your feet.
Right. Life isn't so complex.
When did you become interested in acupuncture for animals?
Gosh, that actually dates back to 1981, 20 years ago. I was practicing, you know, Western conventional veterinary medicine, and then I actually went to one lecture by my first teacher, and he explained it based on science and neurophysiology, and this light bulb went on inside of me saying, oh my gosh, based on this, there's so many animals that could be helped. And back then, there were only maybe 20 veterinarians in the United States who were practicing it. And so I went on to take some further training in it and started treating animals that couldn't be helped any other way with Western medicine. And to my surprise, they were getting better. And so then gradually my reputation grew that I was able to help animals that couldn't be helped with Western medicine. And then took it where I established a department of acupuncture at the Animal Medical Center in New York, which is the largest animal hospital in the world. And then it grew from there and started teaching it. And it was just, you know, it's certainly what I say about all the different therapies I do is no one form of medicine has all the answers. There is no one magic bullet. You know, my journey has been kind of in search of the magic bullet, and I realized the future is taking the best from all these different therapies, from Western medicine and surgery, from acupuncture, from herbs, from nutrition, and bringing them all together and doing whatever is best for the individual animal.
Yeah. You've used all kinds of therapies in addition to acupuncture, also chiropractic, herbs, massage, and at least once aromatherapy.
Yes.
And I want to tell you a story that relates to that. My cousins had a poodle when they were kids, and when the kids and when the family went away, like, you know, to an event or something, and the house was empty, this poodle was lonesome. So what she did was she would go and collect one item from each member of the family and put them together in a little pile, and then she by the door that the family used to come in and out of the house, and she'd lay there on them. Isn't that interesting?
That's really interesting. One from each member.
Yeah. So there was something from everyone there. You know, whether it was a sock or a mitten or, you know.
Right. What I've found is, it's kind of like using a very mundane example of, like, when you're thinking of buying a new car, then all of a sudden you see that car everywhere. And it's the same with animal consciousness and personalities. When you're open to that and you start recognizing that that does exist, you see it everywhere. Mm. And it's amazing. I've seen some of the most dogmatic, scientific, closed-minded individuals, again, that, boy, you start talking to them about their own animal companion, and the stories they come up with are amazing. Mm. And, you know, my thing is, I feel like it's time, and I am doing this now, collecting enough of these anecdotal stories to document particular personalities and particular behavior patterns.
Yeah. Another thing that this little anecdote tells me, though, is that scent, our scents, are very important to our animals. And if they are under stress and they do have to go to the hospital or something, as you point out in Kindred Spirits, send them along with, you know, something that smells like you.
Absolutely. When you don't have vocalization such as, you know, speech like humans do, the other senses are more developed. And the sense of smell is so important. And they do identify your love, your compassion, your who you are with your smell. And that, to me, is an integral part of a holistic healing when an animal does have to go, whether it's into an animal hospital or a kennel or wherever, anywhere away from home.
Yeah. I have a cat, and he gets so stressed out with a visit to the vet. Tried even going the house call route. That helped a little bit, but, you know, not really significantly. You have any ideas, you know, what I might do to help him through that?
Yes. There are a number of different things. If you're taking them in a carrier, mm-hmm. I mean, the house call route is definitely, I think, the way to go to start, and making sure that you get the next thing is if you can find a veterinarian that really specializes in just cats,
mm-hmm.
they sometimes have developed more unique personal abilities to relate to cats that may be more challenging than other people would,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
But there are things like aromatherapy. Many of my colleagues may admonish me for some of these statements, but, you know, like flower essences, things like that, that don't necessarily have they don't have scientific documentation, but in reality, I've seen them be of benefit in certain cases.
Yeah. Well, I'll give that a try.
Yeah. And, aromatherapy actually has quite a bit of scientific evidence behind it. It's anyone who, you know, aromatherapy can be positive or negative, and anyone who has gone into, say, an animal hospital or a kennel that hasn't been cleaned recently knows the negative aspects of aromatherapy.
Yeah.
But there are many positive benefits of aromatherapy as well.
Yeah, you want to find another kennel or another
right.
vet hospital. We're almost out of time here. Before we go, I checked your webpage, your mm-hmm. homepage on the web, and maybe you'd like to tell folks where to find it. I know it's easy enough to find if you just put Alan Schoen in your search engine, but what is the precise address?
Yeah, it's drschoen.com, and that's DrSchoen.
Okay.
And on it, I have different information on natural health care tips, things you can use, as well as information. I give retreats for animal lovers on deepening and transforming our relationship with animals and nature. And in that, you know, looking at new ways, what I constantly see in my practice and when I was on book tour, wherever I teach, is so many people want to start doing more for animals, doing more for the environment, and want to be more activists, and they're trying to see how they can incorporate that into their lives, into some of them with life-changing careers. And so the retreats help give a space where we can explore that and look at that and see what they can do to help benefit animals and nature and the environment.
Yeah, that's really interesting, the idea of these retreats. Do many veterinarians sign up for them?
Well, I actually have one specifically for veterinarians as well. And they're going over extremely well. And I just had a few veterinarians here at the conference that want to go to the one that's for everyone. You know, so I've found that there's a real need for this. I just started doing these this year, and the feedback has been extremely positive, that I think so many people are yearning to have this deeper connection but are not sure where to go with it. And these retreats are providing a base for exploring that.
Yeah. Sounds like a great thing for animal lovers to do. Dr. Schoen, thank you very much for talking with us this afternoon.
Well, Celeste, it was such a pleasure being with you.
Oh, well, maybe we'll do it again someday in the future. I hope so.
Okay, that'd be great.
Alan Schoen has been our guest this afternoon here in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. You'll find him on the World Wide Web at drschoen.com. That's D-R-S-C-H-O-E-N. S-C-H-O-E-N. Also, if you're interested in animals, you might look for his book, Kindred Spirits, How the Remarkable Bond Between Humans and Animals Can Change the Way We Live. The book is published by Broadway Books.